Here's Lily Johannes. It's a 4-4 if they work this one quickly. Johannes has options left and right. Goes left. Chance and an equaliser for Ajax.
Well, welcome to another episode. What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I'm here with Courtney Stith, who's cracking up for some reason. I guess we'll get to the note soon, but she's looking at the rundown, and I guess, you know, something happened.
The she will score 900 billion goals just made me giggle for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is a question we will definitely answer.
But yes, I'm here. Today was a very weird day. Food saved me twice. You know, you like wake up in a bad mood and then you're cranky and you're like, I haven't eaten anything. Let me eat something. And then like your mood lifts immediately. That's happened to me like 3 times today.
Yeah.
So I think I've just been extra cranky all day and I feel in a better mood after I have some food.
I'm gonna keep it real. You know, I feel like it doesn't really matter how old you get. We're all just giant babies. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's basically like, I'm cranky. What's wrong with me? Oh, I didn't sleep well. I need a nap or I need to eat something. That's about it. Hopefully it's past the like I shit myself phase. Hopefully that's not happening post baby. But, you know, that would probably be a bad day for you as well if that was a problem. So I just think we're all just adult babies.
I actually agree with that. The amount of times where I'm secretly hangry and I need someone to be like, hey, when's the last time you've had a snack? And it's like, I haven't eaten all day.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, when's the last time you had some water? Or how'd you sleep last night? Yeah, I do feel that. Or like, why do you feel bad? Oh, I have gas. Like, I feel like that also applies to a lot of people. Like when people are like, hot girls have stomach issues.
It's
like,
true. It's true.
It's like, oh, why are you in a bad mood? Oh, it's because my tummy hurts.
Yeah.
The best meme to this day is that those two doges where one is like strong. It's like, on the outside, I look strong, and then it's the other one being like, but on the inside, my tummy hurts. I use that literally all the time.
It's extremely accurate. But yeah, I don't know. I just had that revelation. Like, you know what? You're not alone. I definitely have those days where I'm like, man, I'm struggling. And then it's like, oh, because I haven't eaten in like 5 hours. I need to fix that. Anyway, glad you're doing all right. Let's get into it by reading a review as we do. We appreciate when y'all drop reviews for the podcast. Again, it helps us out. If you listen to other podcasts, people always beg you for reviews and ratings. We will do the exact same, but we're going to read a review because that's what we normally do. So remember, 5 stars, drop us a review and, you know, drop a dad joke in here. In fact, this one, shout out to you, Cincy Sporting. I love this review. Titled, easy recommendation, review. If you're not listening to Diaspora United, you're not getting a holistic picture of the women's game. Compelling, detailed, and for those of us who have thoughts about players getting 500 minutes in NWSL, it's satisfying to hear others who love the game like me. I don't have a dad joke because I'm too busy managing a cinnamon roll shop and I don't have time to come up with them. I will tell you one trick of the trade. I play 80s R&B to get people to come to work at 4 a.m. And do you know why? Because Anita Baker. I know you wanted something better, but I'm giving you the best that I got. Oh, oh, you got me. Like, oh, that. Listen, well, this is one of my favorite reviews ever. Nailed it.
I was like, I was reading it and I was like, dang, you run a cinnamon roll shop? Like, what is that like? I was like, you make gluten-free cinnamon rolls? Like, I just like started like complaining. I just like got completely off tangent and like fully missed the joke when I was reading it. I was like, oh, yeah, Anita Baker, nice. I was like, what is life like to run a cinnamon roll shop? And then I realized it was just the setup for a bit.
I almost did the same thing. I was like, damn, Cinnabon have y'all in there at 4 a.m.? That's crazy. But then I got to the Anita Baker, and I was like, ah, my bad. And I was feeling, I had my empathy jumped out, and I was like, damn, that's rough. Okay, we really appreciate that. Again, great review. Thank you so much. You know what? I don't like to pitch y'all against each other, but, you know, try and top that. That's a really good review. If you can layer the dad jokes, bring it. Okay, Courtney, in this episode, we are going to talk about the Women's Champions League. Group C just got set on fire today, which was absolutely amazing and fun to watch. Chelsea made it look too easy, basically in most of the games. Didn't lose one, and probably should have won them all, but we'll talk about it. Paris FC made it look real difficult, unfortunately. My childhood club struggling. NWSL news and notes we're going to hit. There is an Asisat Oshoala rumor floating around. We need to talk about it. Anything else before we get started?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to do a quick review because this was kind of wild the way everything went down. So I'm just going to do a quick review because basically, like, every single goal kind of changed how things were going. So Bayern and Roma, they both went up around 36 minutes in the match. Or I think Roma's goal was like in the 32nd or something. But basically within 36 minutes of match time, Bayern and Roma were both up 1-0, which basically meant it was kind of a boring Bayern and PSG are going to go through. You know, as the group had Bayern, PSG, Ajax, and Roma. And if you were to look at that group, you're like, ooh, it could get spicy. But you would also expect Bayern and PSG to kind of fight their way through. Then, young God, Lily Johannes, assist just before halftime, made it 1-1, which meant that Ajax had a chance. They had to win, but it also meant that Bayern had to win. First of all, you know what? I'm going to say the Lily Johannes thing. We talked about her last episode, but I'm going to save it because this, the move she makes, multiple moves in this buildup were exceptional, okay? But we'll get to that. In the 73rd minute, Tabitha Chiwenga scored 1-1. Bayern out, Ajax in. Then it was 1-1 PSG and Bayern changed the flow. And then PSG, a minute later, gave up a goal to Lehmann. And so
it's
like it was
75 seconds.
Yeah, it was literally, absolutely ridiculous. I was trying to get like my tweet. I was screen capping and everything. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get this because this is crazy. Like, look at the table. And then, no, never mind. Never mind. Can't trust PSG for nothing. Bayern was through and then Ajax was out. And then Roma scored an own goal in the 84th minute, which is real brutal for them. But honestly, the chaos gods needed it. I'm sorry, Roma. I love you. But the chaos gods needed this goal to happen. And unfortunately, it was an own goal. So it was 2-2 in Ajax. It was 2-1 Ajax with the lead over Roma. And then own goal popped up again. 4 minutes later, Georgia Stanway said, I ain't seen own goal in a minute, and decided to put one in the back of her own net for no good reason. And then it was 2-2, Bayern out. Bayern thought they scored a goal in stoppage time to win it. She was way offside, so that was a correct call.
So I saw someone tweet, I tweeted, why is she celebrating like that? It was so clear to all of us that she was offside, and someone said she had the nerve to rip off her shirt when she was a hectare offside. It made me laugh really hard. I will say, though, both of those own goals that happened were not the same. No. One of them was an unfortunate, like, glancing header that instead of going up in the other way, went in the back of the net. And then Georgia Stanway's, I'm actually surprised they gave it to her because I thought that shot was on target. And so normally when you, like, see a shot on target, but then it gets a deflection and goes in, they don't give it as an own goal. But maybe it was, like, maybe actually was off target and then her, and then it hitting her and going in the back of the net made it on target. I don't know. But I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. Like, it's not the worst. Like, I was just surprised they gave it to her as an own goal. Because that's, like, the least, like, own goal-looking own goal, if that makes sense. Like, it was just a deflection.
Yeah, even, like, you know what? I did say, I was kind of rude and said she kicked the ball in the back of her net for no good reason, which was rude. Rude to do, because it wasn't really like that. But it is just, and it is kind of brutal when it's a deflection like that. But also, it happens, and it sucks. But it gave us chaos, so I'm happy about it. I'm kind of like you, though. I do wonder if they review that and if maybe when we wake up tomorrow, that's not an own goal. We'll see. I'm checking right now and it's still listed as an own goal, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But basically, Group C went down into what? I think the 88th minute was when that deflected goal from Georgia Stanway went in and put Bayern out. And Ajax had the win. So, like, it went really late in both games to actually decide. And the order of who was in and who was out changed how many times?
Four. So, like, this is the thing. Technically, Roma goes up before Bayern. And it's probably, like, granted, like, a 3 or 4 minute difference between the two goals. So, at first, it was the day started in this order of PSG, Ajax, Bayern, Roma. So Roma was at the bottom of the group. Roma then goes up 1-0. Roma then gets catapulted into first place. So then it's Roma, PSG, Bayern, Ajax. Then obviously Bayern gets a go-ahead, which pulls us to, and Bayern somehow is in first place. And so then it's Bayern, PSG, Roma, Ajax. And then for a little bit, when Ajax came back or got the equalizer, then it was Bayern, PSG, Ajax, Roma. And then PSG gets the equalizer, and then it's PSG, Ajax, Bayern, Roma, which is essentially ultimately how it finished, with PSG, Ajax, Bayern, Roma. But yeah, basically every permutation that was possible of Bayern could go through, Roma could go through, PSG could go through, or Ajax could go through happened over the course of these games. And there was actually a little funny moment where, as you said, where it was that Bayern and Ajax were in and PSG was out. When Bayern went up, was still up 2-1 and Ajax went up 2-1.
Yeah.
Which we were like, you know, for the past, what, two or three match days, PSG has been leading the group. So it was like, PSG is out? Like, what? And then obviously then they, and that's when they were just like, essentially threw caution to the wind. And we're like, we're completely going for it and started throwing everything at goal.
I want to give a shout out to a friend of the pod, Tamara Griffin, for capturing the essence of needing to rely on PSG to do something to make this chaotic and fun. Because Silves, another friend of the pod, you know, Shea Butter FC, make sure you're following, listen, subscribing to everything that they do. But Silves tweeted, having to rely on PSG seems terrible. And it's a screenshot where my tweet is right below that. And it says, laughing my ass off, God damn it, PSG, because they had just scored and then they conceded. And right when they scored, like everything was thrown into flux, like everything went bonkers because it changed all of the math for the group. And then they concede, and then it looks like it goes right back. So that, like, deflected own goal was important to kind of give us the full chaos ending we deserved. But PSG almost messed it up, and I was just real mad because I was, like, sitting there waiting for, like, the Google thing to update so I could be like, yes, we got the full chaos. And then we didn't get it because they allowed a goal in, like, what, you said 75 seconds. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I was actually so mad because Google was taking such a long time to update because that's how it's, like, sending out. For those who don't know, I had a thread of all of the permutations over the course of the matches, and I would update after someone scored. But towards the end, Google's taking way too long, so I was like, ah. And so I was just like literally took out my phone and took a photo of the DAZN stream on my computer because they basically did like a small animation of like the movement and then who was in the reshuffling of it. But yeah, I was like, why did we choose to rely on PSG? I was like, I feel like anytime we've been like, come on, PSG, they've ultimately let us down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did we? And also there was a moment of time where they really, like, there was a very good chance that they weren't making it through because also Bayern outplayed them, even though it was like dual screening. There was a period of time where Bayern was like outplaying them like fully. Like, I'm honestly kind of surprised that PSG scored two goals, even though they still had a ton of chances, but also that, like, there were some times where, like, Bayern was, like their press was really, really effective on PSG. There was also a really funny moment where there was four of them trying to chase down Sandy Baltimore, and she still danced around all of them, and I was like, she's a menace. Yeah, I actually don't think PSG necessarily played super well this match. They just, maybe in the way that French teams do, they just kind of find a way to get through when they did. But yeah, I was like, Bayern fully outplayed them. Ajax Roma was a really fun match. Like,
it was incredibly fun. It was very wild. Yeah.
Johannes was just at times like really dominating the midfield. I feel like it's also the first time in a while because it's, and the thing is, it's hard, right? Like when you see four games at once and you're like, all right, gonna choose, you know, which game I'm gonna like watch and focus on. But I was like, today, I was like, I really want to watch. Because I honestly thought the PSG-Bayern match was going to be like a cakewalk for PSG, just the form that they've been in coming into this. And that obviously that ended up being a lot more competitive, but I was like, I'm going to fully focus on Ajax-Roma for the first like 20, 30 minutes of the match. And I was like, I see why Silves and Andre have been shouting about her. I do. I see it. I was like, I saw literally 10 touches and 2 passes, and I was like, mm-hmm, yep, I see it. And I was like, Emma, send a WhatsApp, a carrier pigeon. A LinkedIn request.
The carrier pigeon. Right.
A note.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throw a paper airplane. Thing. Do you like us? US/Team Distant? Check yes. Check no. But I was like, you get on the phone right now.
She's legit. I think, and shout out to the piece. I tweeted it. It was in The Guardian about Lily Yohannes leading up to the game. It was written by Mariam Korabi, who is She Scores Bangers, I believe, on Twitter, which is dope. Also follow her. She's dope. But like, yeah, that was a cool, it was a good conversation between her and Lily. Lily kind of talks about her game a little bit in there and kind of her growing up and, you know, being the youngest player to start in a Champions League match is as well, like breaking that record over there in Europe is kind of dope. She was born in Springfield, Virginia, has played in the US youth system, but apparently she hasn't been called up to any sort of US team since 2022. And currently, according to the article, she does not hold a Dutch passport, but is eligible to apply for one, having lived in the country for more than 6 years, which means if the Dutch steal her, I'ma start flipping tables. Because like that assist that she had was, it's everything that you want your like midfielder to do. She got in a duel. She was able to win the ball. She was able to take the ball without fouling, spin into space, drive forward into the space. There was a heavy touch right at the end, and I was like, ah, I think she's going to overrun it. I think the defender's going to step up and get it. But she got to it, and she was smart enough to kind of like, she almost disguised the pass to give the player just a little bit more time to set up the shot. It was excellent play, and I was thinking in my brain, when's the last time we saw someone for the U.S. Women's National Team do that from midfield, right? Like, just take the ball, turn, run, and lay off an assist. It was probably Sam Mewis, if I'm being honest.
I was like, I think the only two players I can think who's probably done that recently for the U.S. Women's National Team is Sam and maybe Rose.
Yeah, Rose would be the other one who's like, possibility that she's done that as well. But again, trying to play Rose as an eight who can do some defensive work kind of misses having her as the 10, which we could have multiple 10s on the game, depending on opponent. But still, you need that like solid presence. And on the day, Yohannes was kind of playing as a 10. She was kind of central at times, but she was also drifting a lot. And being sometimes she was wide right, sometimes she was wide left. So she showed a lot of versatility in this game in where she played. And I think she won player of the match as well, because, I mean, she was great.
You know, that was actually, well, sorry, I will say that, the reason why I said Rose of like players who I thought have done that, because also because of the problems in the midfield, we've made Rose an eight. Like,
yeah, correct.
Before she was a 10. Now, honestly, at times she can play as a proper eight. Do I want us to play like that? No. But is that the real, like, has that been the reality of the situation for the past 2 years? Yes. But yeah, in terms of like a pure center midfielder who does that, Sam Mewis is an obvious comparison. I don't know if she got player of the match. And do you want to know why? And I'll tell you. There were tweets saying Yohannes got player of the match. And tweets from UEFA. But then a photo came out of Spitzer with the trophy. So I was like, and they were tweeted by Ajax. I was like, I don't know. I think she's player of the match. That's what the Women's Champions League account said. But then them photos came out, so I was like, maybe they gave two of them. But I was like, I thought she 100% deserved
or
player of the match.
Maybe it was like a watch and spirit situation. Sometimes like the supporters will give a player of the match trophy too. But if it was like the exact same trophy, then yeah, I'm confused. Maybe Giannis was just like, I don't know.
Because it was like, that's what the Women's Champions League account tweeted, like, four players in the matches today.
Right.
And Yohannes was one of them. But then the photo, and I was like, there's really not this much discrepancy between these two. So it's like, but no, I thought she 100% deserved a player of the match. And yeah, at times, I felt like she was playing as a 10, but then also when they needed her to, she would come back and play more as an 8. I wish it was easier to watch them outside of basically the Women's Champions League. Because it's like, you know, set up for a certain way of knowing how you want to attack your opponents. And for example, seeing how at times Roma can 100% lose that midfield battle, or even just at times just fully get hit on the counter. I'm thinking about that last game that they had in the Women's Champions League versus Bayern. But yeah, honestly, I thought she played, like, she was very, very fun to watch. Even throughout all the chaos, it was one where I was like, because I had, like, audio turned on one game. And so I was listening very intently anytime they're like, oh, Yohannes. And I would, like, immediately turn back or rewind 10 or 15 seconds to see it. And then on the Roma side, it's unfortunate they lost 2-1, because I would actually say I think they played a lot better than they did versus Bayern. I think they were trying to hit
yeah.
at Ajax a lot more and being a lot more on the front foot and try to control the game at times.
They also missed a couple good chances.
They missed one or two big chances. But to me, that's like what the Women's Champions League is about.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the chaos, but also having really good teams go at each other. And it's also Roma's second season in the Women's Champions League. That team Roma didn't have a women's team until, I think they bought the charter in 2020, I believe, from the other Roman team that was like in Serie A Femminile. So it's like your second season in the Women's Champions League. You've already accomplished so much for like in your domestic season for in the last year, you know, basically keeping Juventus out of the Women's Champions League on that champions path. And to almost, and like for what, 30 or okay, technically 5 minutes, but there was a chance they could have gotten another goal and made it through to the champion, like to the knockout stages. It's like pretty good. But also Ajax is the first Dutch club to hit the Women's Champions League quarterfinals ever, which is cool.
Yeah, I dig it. And I think to go back to Johannes for again, I just want to underscore one thing. She's 16.
Right? She is also like, 16. I want to call her a grown woman, but I'm like, you're a baby.
She is a baby, but look at how she competes physically in midfield already. Like, yeah, build on that. Keep the passing range. Keep the determination to find space. Work on some of the other things within the game to refine them. But yeah, that's a player we just cannot lose.
That's a diamond in the rough.
Oh, not. I mean, honestly, not even rough.
I would say like somewhere between rough, like full rough, and then like you're a shiny polished diamond.
Yeah.
But it's
only
because she's, again, 16.
Yeah, she's exactly. I was going to say she's one of those that's like already shining. She just kind of needs like somebody like Buffett. You know what I mean? Just like, you know, just polish a little bit and then we good. So we'll see. All right, let's go to Group D.
Diamond.
Do you? I don't know. Group D. Kind of straightforward. Chelsea 4, Paris FC nothing. That was such a weird game too, because I don't even think like Chelsea made a ton of changes. I think it was like 9 changes as well to the team.
It was a ton.
I don't believe Lauren James played. There were some players who just didn't step on the pitch. But
Musevich
like,
played in goal randomly.
Yeah, Musevich came back in goal. And it ain't like Chelsea played great, but Chelsea just kind of did that. Fran Kirby scored a header again. This is her second header in a row. 2 games in a row, she's scoring headers. It cracks me up every time she scores a header. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to, like, it wasn't a great performance. It was fun, you know. You top the group. You get out of the group without losing a game. That game versus Real Madrid was basically the rest being like, y'all ain't going to win this game, but it could have been a 3-1. Win, and it was not.
I'm still mad about that.
That's I'm real heated about horrendous. It, but luckily it didn't cause a problem. So Chelsea threw, Big Fish scored a goal. Bully.
She did. Her just first Women's Champions League goal ever.
Yeah. When I saw the ball clipped in and I saw it wasn't going to go too high, I was like, oh, that's a goal. She getting her head to that no matter what. And she just basically took the girl, just mushed her. Just get out my way and got her head on that ball. The commentator had a lot of words for Nadozia on that one, saying that she could have done better. But I'm like, that's such a close range header and into the ground. That is not easy to save.
Like under, like the actual placement was like tucked under, like she was like diving and it was like tucked under her like armpit.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, want to see like maybe get like a hand on it. But honestly, I think it was just kind of like the Fran Kirby header. It was just too close to the goalkeeper to really reasonably expect that type of reaction. I mean, if she does it and she keeps that, it's like, oh my God, that's a great save. But are you expecting, oh my God, it's a great save every single time the ball goes near the net? With her, maybe kind of, and certainly with penalties. But I don't fault her for either one of those headers, because they were basically wide open headers, like what, 3 feet in front of her? That's tough.
Yeah, I feel like Chelsea was really dominating aerially at times, which you don't expect from them. A Millie Brightless Chelsea, a Sam Kerrless Chelsea.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know how great Mia Fischel is in the air, but like, you know, it's not like we have, or the players on the pitch are like extremely dominant aerial threats. They're like, oh, they're not going to 100% in and like score a ton of headed goals. But yeah, honestly, it was like, I thought it was an okay performance, but the type of performance where it's like you just kind of come in and like cleanup business. You're just like, you know.
Pretty much.
We got to go.
Business like, trip.
Yeah. So like, you got to go. You got to get, get your points. Like the, kind of felt bad for Paris FC at one point with that goal that Guerreau scored.
Yeah, I felt real bad at them because they like, I don't know what Paris, it's the thing that makes me laugh about Paris FC, especially this kind of performance, is like, they certainly peaked during the qualifying rounds, right? Because they're the ones who kept out Wolfsburg. They're the ones who beat Arsenal as well. And if you watch this game in particular, you're like, there ain't no fucking way. Like, how did that team do that? Because there were so many just weird, like they still created a few chances, but they weren't like super threatening. You couldn't really see like the thing they did where they really hung their hat on good defense and being able to hit teams quickly, which was a problem. And I don't think Wolfsburg or Arsenal were prepared at that point of the season to cope with it. Chelsea was. They were just like, okay, no problem. You know, like we see how this is. But like, you know, it just that mistake in particular was one that was just like so weird because Ndozie couldn't grab it. It was outside of the box and the defenders just kind of stood there like, oh, she's got it. And it's like, look where you are.
Like, no, you don't. I feel like out of all, obviously they lost 4-0, but I feel like out of all the games, this is probably the worst that they played. And like, you know, I think they played their worst both times against Chelsea, but the other game, at least in the beginning, felt a lot more competitive. You know, Chelsea gets one, but then Paris FC immediately gets one back. Chelsea needs halftime to then go and get the second, third, and fourth. Or I feel like, you know, that game, I mean, I know we talked about it last time, but that game against Hacken, I thought they 100% should have won in terms of like the actual, like, in terms of the actual quality of chances they had. Like, Hacken had maybe had the more beautiful play, but Ndozie was a brick wall that match. And then in terms of the other, like, the actual quality chances that Paris FC had on the other side, they, like, should have won that game. And so maybe they come into this match maybe a little more fired up. They, again, were essentially counting on Real Madrid to somehow get a win, which Real Madrid, it's not a spoiler alert, but spoiler alert, did not. but, yeah, I feel like today was like the, or this match was definitely their weakest match as a side versus, yeah, I feel like they, those performances where they really hang their hat on of like being, you know, really staunch to, or being really frustrating to other teams defensively, either through their defensive shape or Ndozie just becoming alive, which she does tend to do. They just didn't, it's unfortunately didn't play well today and probably leave their, this like incredible campaign that they had in the Champions League on a sour note. Cause there was also a chance that they 100% could have gotten through. Yeah. Even though I know people have been really high on Hacken in the way that they played, like the matches that they played together, it wasn't like it was, like a huge blowout. Like it's not like they ever outside of this match really, or maybe the other Chelsea match. It's not like they ever really gotten like, you know, blown out 5-0, 6-0, something like that. So yeah, I don't know. It was kind of unfortunate, but it is. I'm trying really hard not to say it is, but it is because I do it all the time. But it's, you know, it's like you have a 0-0, and you just kind of need luck to go in your favor, and maybe they realize coming into it that that might not be the way. But they, like, I don't know, they are a team that can fight back and like has a few like very narrow margin like losses, even in club in the Women's Champions League or in D1 Arkema. So I feel like they'll bounce back from it, and I also very much expect them to come back next season and also take names.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said from, you know, about a team being able to, like, surprise an opponent who's, like, higher caliber, higher tier, you would assume would be, like, more talented than they would, and being able to have a structure that would frustrate them and then having the quality to be able to hit them once they're frustrated. So, like, I get it, but once you kind of lose that element of surprise almost, it becomes difficult. So I think right now for Paris FC, it's just about that transition. Like you snuck up on two teams. Unfortunately, it was in the qualifying round. It wasn't in group stages. You had to do that to get to the group stages, which again, I can't discount because the two teams they took out were incredible performances and incredible matches. But like now it's kind of transitioning into what are they going to be next? You know, when they put things together, they're not going to be a team that sneaks up on people, but they still can build something on what they had and the success that they had as well. And I kind of trust them. I mean, if you kind of do a little bit of reading about Paris FC, They have been smart in what they do in terms of their recruitment, their scouting. You know, they're one of the few teams in Europe that have like scouts, dedicated scouts that they work with them, apart from like the big clubs that you would historically think, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Lyon, all of that. But like they have something cooking there. And I think this was has to be like they can feel good. They surprised some teams, got themselves on the map. They ran into, you know, Chelsea and had some unfortunate luck against BK Hakan, which could have got them through. But building on this, I'm interested to see what they do next.
Yeah. And I mean, they're like, to me, Paris FC is always, I feel like the past few seasons, it's also always a team that's been very solidly like the best of the rest in France. Like they've, I mean, they've come third past three seasons in a row. And so, yeah, I like hope that they come back. I mean, I would expect them to come back next season and probably qualify for the group stage. But also, I feel like maybe for a Wolfsburg and maybe an Arsenal, because it was they were in the qualifying stage, where I feel like maybe Real Madrid also in the group stage did this too, of not really like fully respecting your opponent and like fully preparing for the game and, you know, making sure you're getting all your tactics right, as opposed to just like being like, oh, we're Real Madrid, like we're going to win just on the sheer strength of our name, which against Paris FC did not happen. They lost twice to them.
Yeah, it didn't happen against nobody. They had one lone point and it was handed to them by the referees,
which I'm still mad about, because that was ridiculous. But yeah, I feel like Paris FC was like just one of those quiet underdogs that people weren't expecting, because yeah, I was like looking over their results and it's like outside of the Chelsea match, they didn't lose any other game by more than a goal, and it was still like, you know, tight and competitive for them. But yeah, they just gotta find their finishing boots.
Yeah, and recruit. We'll see. I mean, to be honest, like a couple spare players, you know, Aneg Boutel and Ule Matasar came from Paris FC, so they have talent that they need to replace, and they got to do some recruiting and some scouting to be able to do that. But I've got faith. I'm hoping that they can do that during the offseason and get back. Not only get back to where they are, but get to a team that is solid enough to not just surprise teams. They can go in there and actually toe-to-toe with them because, again, qualifying round or not, early in the season or not, they went toe-to-toe with two semifinalists from last year's Champions League and beat them. So, like,
yeah,
that's dope. That's real dope.
Yeah. And I feel like part of it, too, is just the luck of the draw, too. Like, I think about, like, Lyon's group, and while they could not have been drawn in Lyon's group because you're not allowed to be drawn with a team from your other country, like if for some reason Lyon was drawn in group A and Paris FC was in group B, like I would 100% expect Paris FC to get out of that group. It's also just kind of like sometimes the unluckiness of the draw. And I mean, we already went over group chaos, where I feel like any of those teams in any other group definitely get out of the group stage. But yeah, Andre, for group A and B tomorrow, technically the Women's Champions League group stage isn't done, but the other groups are already settled.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't love how the group shook out. I think we could have had more exciting groups, but, you know, kind of was what it was. And we did get group C full of excitement. But tomorrow, you know, if y'all are listening to this on the day, sorry to put a damper on the games, but basically can't nothing change. Everything's been decided already when you look at it. So Barcelona has 15 points. Benfica has 8 points. Eintracht Frankfurt's got 4. Can't do nothing. Rosengard only has 1. They can't do nothing. So those clubs are out. Barcelona's going to top the group. Benfica's going to come in second. In the next group, Lyon, they got 13 points. Braun has 10 points. But the goal difference is outrageous. I think it's like 20 or something. So like, even though they could, they'd have to score an absolutely astronomical level of goals. So let's just say, reality's sake, that's not happening. So Lyon's topping the group. Braun is coming out second. Slavia Praha got 4 points. They're out. St. Poulton has 1 point. They're out. So that's it for the groups in terms of that. So that's going to be very interesting when the draw is done. But also, Courtney, I have a question. Is the Frauen Bundesliga okay? Are they good?
I don't know.
Like, no Frauen Bundesliga team is making it through. Like, Wolfsburg out in the qualifying round, Bayern Munich out of Group C, Eintracht Frankfurt topped by Benfica.
Honestly, I don't really know what's going on with the Frauen Bundesliga. I think if we want to even go bigger picture, like Germany got grouped at the Women's World Cup this summer, which was like, what? Yeah. We didn't even get to see the cool kids. I'm still mad about that.
I know, right?
But we didn't get to see the cool kids. But yeah, to me, it's While it is not a signal of how German football will do on the world stage, because I still think they have plenty of ballers. Like, we saw Julia Gwynn get back, got on the score sheet. Her header also was insane. I don't know if you saw it, but that looping header she had, I was like, that's a really good header. You know, but maybe, I don't really have a reason for it, but are they okay right now? Not really. Will they probably be okay next year? I would hope. Maybe that it now signals to these clubs that it's like, oh, we need to invest a lot more. Especially for like a Wolfsburg, a Bayern, and a Frankfurt. Like, the women's transfer fees going on right now are something that you pay your men's players like a week. Like, you can step your game up a bit and invest some more money in your women's clubs if you want them to keep dominating in Europe.
I'll say this. If they are struggling, and part of the problem was us taking Nuskin, I don't see any reason in the world why we shouldn't add Oberdorf this summer. And, you know,
look,
I mean, if they're going to be struggling,
Emma
might
scouted
as well.
Her when she was like 17. I mean,
I know people are like, oh, greedy Chelsea fans. But hey, man, listen.
If she goes, I'm moving to London. And I said, I'm moving to a lot of places. Like I said, if Bunny goes to Chicago, I'm moving to Chicago. Like, I want to move to Seattle so I can watch Ji-Seo-Yoon like up close every week. But like, literally, if Alina signs for Chelsea, I will be there so often. The TSA agents will know my name. They'll be like, hi, Courtney, how are you doing this week? I will be there all the time because I want to watch her up close all the time. This might mean you have Diaspora United on the road.
I'll also say, like, you know, this isn't just dreaming, but this is like, I'm kind of poking fun because I think one of the transfer sites, I don't remember which one, threw out there, and of course a few others threw it out there once it was posted, but it says something like Chelsea's monitoring the situation with Lena Oberdorf, and everybody was like, oh my God, it's happening. And I was like, what is wrong with y'all? Like, have y'all not been around these ridiculous transfer rumors? Monitoring the situation don't mean shit except for like, man, sure would like to have that player on my team, which everybody is saying.
Right. It's like, oh, wow. A team is monitoring how Lena Oberdorf is doing at Wolfsburg, right. And maybe she's not signing a contract extension? What a surprise.
Right, yeah.
Now, the most chaotic thing is if she comes to the NWSL, but...
That would be super chaotic, and I'd be here for it.
I think people would not be prepared. In the same way, they're not going to be prepared for Castellano or... when Asisa Oshoala eventually comes. Oh, there's a transition. People aren't going to be ready. And I, for one, first of all, I'm ready. We've been ready. But I'm also ready for people to find out how much those two are going to tear up this league. Especially, like, Castellanos. Actually, both of them. But, like, to me, in two entirely different ways, how they're going to tear up this league. I just don't think people are ready. But I'm ready. I think we're both ready because we were like, oh yeah, we understand this quality of player and how good she is. I just don't think people, and not to fault them either, but like if you're not super into the Women's Champions League, maybe you just discovered this podcast over the summer and you're like starting to get into women's soccer. And so you don't necessarily know about a lot of these world beaters that have been playing in Europe and, you know, trying to watch via VPNs or, you know, jumping through two rings of fire and trying to do and like nosediving into a pool to try to, you know, find a Barcelona stream. Like, these players are going to tear up this league. And I, for one, am so excited. I also don't think they're going to be also prepared, like, for the NWSL getting trucked at times or ready to go up against a player like a Sarah Gordon where it's like, oh, she's faster than me. Or she's as fast as me? What do you mean? Like that. Like that side eye Katoto and Diani gave Sarah Gordon in that Women's Cup game when they were like, excuse me?
What are you doing here?
Right, exactly. But no, I am truly so excited for the two of them to come. Obviously, Oshawala is just a rumor right now, but it's rumor, I think, backed by some credible reporting. It's not like some random Twitter user was like, I'm hearing Asisa Oshawala is coming to the NWSL. Like, we saw plenty of tweets from credible sources being like, we're hearing that an NWSL team is is getting Asisa Oshawala. And we're like, excuse me? Dana Castellanos Tabe got confirmed last week. She in particular was actually really excited to come to the NWSL and cited wanting to play for a super possession-based team, like how Albertine Montoya plans to play with Bay FC. But yeah, I'm like really excited for her to come. I know she didn't always get a ton of time at Manchester City because Gareth Taylor, what are you doing? But also, I'm like, I can't lie. When it comes to their wingers, I do get it a little bit with how Hempy's been playing and how Kelly's been playing.
We got a Taylorite, a Gareth Taylor cultist.
Don't you dare put that name on me. That man is deeply unserious all the time. But I'm saying, when you have a Lauren Hemp and a Chloe Kelly who have been in such fantastic form,
I get it.
However, I do think she still should have played more because that man also would like put out, like trot out like an insane 11 against like Reading. But like
Here's the thing though, they went and got Jill Roard, and before her ACL injury, which was really unfortunate, and that really sucks. But like she helped, you know, create space for Bunny as well. And she was another threat in the box as well, which kind of made life a little bit easier for the two wingers. So like, I think, I don't know what qualities he saw in her or he thinks he had, but I think he could have done the same thing with Castellanos. He just never really put her in that position and trusted her and gave her that. But that's something that she could have done from the middle of the pitch. And that's something that's made Manchester City much better this season, having Jill Roard, and why that's such a crucial injury. Like, I think the only other player for them that could have been as devastating is actually Bunny. It's because Jill Roard was giving them a completely different dynamic. And everybody knows they want to go up the wings. That's what they're going to try to do. They're pretty good at it. But if you double up, you can kind of stop the service. And if you stop the service, then maybe you don't get hit. Like, maybe Bunny Shaw doesn't score a hat trick and you have a chance. But with Jill Roard, it was like, now you got cutbacks. Now you have shots from the center of the pitch. Now you have to worry about a 10 kind of floating around in those half spaces. And I don't know if they're going to have that right now.
Yeah, that is true. I guess sometimes, well, I also feel like sometimes she's, maybe Gareth Taylor tried to do with her what he did to Roosevelt, which was make her a winger as opposed to putting her in the center of the
park.
That
dumb shit.
Which is silly. And I will also be completely transparent where I've watched, for example, I'm like, I've watched Roosevelt so many times more than I've watched Dana Castellanos. Also, because I have constant beef with FA player, I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, I do think her coming to the league will be absolutely great. Like her as an attacking midfielder, setting up even for just the forwards Bay FC have already signed right now. I think it's gonna be really good. And I know that she also in particular said that she was really, really excited to come to the NWSL because of the NWSL's style of play. She also, in an interview with Attacking Third, mentioned the similarities between the NWSL and the WSL, which might have ruffled some feathers, but she's not wrong. And talk about physical fast play. I was like, she's not wrong, but maybe we'll have that conversation for another day, because I don't really want to
get. Many people are saying.
I was like, many people have been saying. But I think what also what people aren't prepared for with Castellanos more than anything is I think she is such a fantastic long range shooter.
Yep.
She can strike a ball so nicely, like from real far out. And I just don't think people are prepared for that.
Off the dribble, off the volley, off the half volley. It doesn't really matter. She'll put foot, left foot. She has scored some absolute bangers in every single way. So like, I agree. I do not think people are ready. And also, you know, she's still very young. She's only 24. She turns 25, I believe, in April.
Which is wild.
You're not talking about a player who's like she's entering her prime and really needs to be somewhere that's going to kind of like bring that out, like back out from her, because like, no joke, she was on the shortlist, the 3-player shortlist for the 2017, like FIFA's best women's player in the world. Like, that's how good she was. And she was playing for, I think Santa Clara Blue Heat was one of those teams over there. In the, and I don't remember which league, United Women's Soccer, I think it was.
WPSL.
She was also playing for Florida State. But like, listen, the skill in this player, I think people are like, she wasn't really playing in Manchester City. So like she kind of starred a little bit, got Atletico Madrid into the Champions League, played pretty well, went to Manchester City, didn't really make a dent in there. So maybe you don't know what type of player you're getting. Nah, that's a motherfucking baller. And I'm so glad she's going to get a chance to like run the show for a team like Bay FC. I'm shook. I'm shooketh and I'm excited to watch.
Yeah, I in particular am really, really excited. I'm really excited to see her combined with a player like a Tess Bodhi, which I think will be really good. But also, like, I'm assuming they're probably going to have outside backs like get up in the wing. And so, like, a player like Kiki Pickett, I think, will be really, really good. Obviously, I have not seen their new signing Princess yet, but yeah, she has a dope name. And so I think that automatically qualifies her to be a dope player. Sometimes it's just like vibes, and I think that's vibes. But also, her combining with a player like Scarlett Camberos, like, and her just kind of occupying the center of the park. Even though now that I think about it, the more I've been talking, I don't think Gareth Taylor knows what. Do you think Gareth? Okay, let me not be disrespectful, because I almost asked a disrespectful question. But sometimes I don't think Gareth Taylor knows what to do with a 10.
Yeah, I'd agree.
She plays as a 10. For a long time, we saw some questionable things with what he was doing with Mary Fowler, too.
Yep. I mean, you said it earlier. He put Roosevelt on the wing, and people in Europe acted like, because she can't play in midfield in the WSL. Man, that's the most, like, even more than Sam Mewis. Sam Mewis just couldn't be stopped because you can't stop Sam Mewis. So, like, correct. That's really it. But in terms of, like, technical ability, skill on the ball, that's the most, like, European-style technical player that we've had. So you can't tell me that Rose wouldn't have worked in a midfield for Manchester City if he would have figured it out.
Yeah, Gareth Taylor doesn't know what to do with an attacking midfielder not named Joe Ward.
Well, so I have a question, though. Let's getting back to the NWSL, though.
I just got myself so distracted.
Okay, so we are, like you said, there are the rumors pretty confirmed or substantial rumors from accounts that don't be lying, don't be out here lying, are that Oshawala's coming. Don't know, confirm where she's going yet. I've heard people say Washington Spirit because they're just looking at the Barcelona connection.
She's following her coach.
Why would she do that when that coach was like benching her for like Piteous at the 9?
Nine, not even like a 9-9.
Yeah, and she hasn't had like a string of like really strong like consecutive starts, and so maybe it could be the case where he looks at the NWSL and believes that like this is the type of forward in this league where she could start every game. That would be a smart assumption. I just don't know how involved he is yet, and also imagine Barcelona fans' reaction if Oshawala leaves Barcelona right now to come to the Spirit. I would want to see it, but I don't think him and his family needs that smoke, right? So I don't know if that's happening.
I think
the thing that scares me, though,
burn down the Washington Spirit.
The thing that really scares me is if she goes to Bay FC, because the one thing I've been thinking, what would really compliment Dana is having a player that is fast, can create that separation and be a worry for the back line, and also a high volume shot getter. And that's both of those things are exactly what Oshawala does. And that creates a lot of space in those pockets where Dana can go off.
It would be diabolical. I would be here for it.
That's right. The correct word, yes.
If that happens, I'm moving to San Francisco for the Bay. Sorry, the Bay. I'm going.
Okay, London, and you've moved to London and now the Bay on this podcast.
Gotcha. And Chicago.
And Seattle.
And Seattle.
Correct.
Okay. That would, in fact, be extremely diabolical. I'd be very here for it, though. Even though I have also heard the idea that she's going to Houston to combine with her Nigerian compatriot, Michelle Elozia.
I'd love that too, actually.
Also would be diabolical. Houston plays in like a 4-4-2.
I've been calling for it since last season, but I'm telling you, get a quick forward next to Ordóñez. That's how you do it.
I think that would be also like, I think she would also be someone like really good for Ordóñez to learn from too.
Yep.
Maria Sanchez cutting it up on the wing. Oshawala in the middle.
See the vision?
I see the vision, and I really like it. But, to be fair, I don't know a ton about Houston's new coach. I was thinking about how they didn't really involve Ebony Salmon. I was a bit nervous that, like, or I am nervous that if Oshawala does go there, try to play, like, a 4-3-3 or something as opposed to a 4-4-2. and finding a way to get them both on the pitch at the same time. But again, she's another player people are not prepared for. The first African to play in the Women's Champions League. Good stat for you. Actually, if you like look at her Wikipedia page right now, it's like really fun watching, like funny, like looking at the previous clubs that she played for, where you're like, oh, interesting. But yeah, like when she's played for Barcelona, she's been absolutely electric. Obviously, we saw what she did during the Women's World Cup when Nigeria got that huge 3-2 win over Australia. I was there. The vibes in the stadium were off because there was a bunch of Australians. However, I was having a good time. Again, another serious, proper footballer. A grown woman, if you would say. And I think she's just going to tear up this league. As Andre put in our notes, she's going to score 900 billion goals, which is why I was giggling at the top of this episode. Because for some reason, that just made me giggle. Because also, I very much expect her to score so many goals.
I believe Sil said it in one of the Slack chats that we're in, but she's the type of forward in this league that could threaten Sam Kerr's record. And I absolutely agree. That is her ability to not only get in behind, but she's really good also in transition. And really, it's about being a volume shooter. You know, sometimes Barcelona fans can get mad at her because she can be like, you know, when they do all the passing and she misses like a chance, they get frustrated because the ball didn't hit the back of the net. But you keep feeding her and she's the type of person who will score a ton of goals. And I just think that she's going to find some poor back line that's not going to be prepared and she's going to eat them alive for like 3-4 goals and it's going to be rough. I'm extremely excited to see her come. I got a question for you though, because another big intra-league move happened and Masiah Bright traded
friend of the pod
Angel City.
Huge move. Yeah. That's a huge move. I felt two ways about this. One, although she does not play as a nine, it did for some reason make me think, oh, Kristen Press might not be back for her.
Don't why is that how because you want to start this?
Because that's the first place my brain went.
Well, tell it not to.
You think if I could tell my brain to not go in dark places, I would not have done that by now?
I'm just saying, you bring that to the podcast.
For being on the surface for 27 years, if I could do that, I wouldn't have done it by now. I can't lie, though. Being real, that was my first reaction was like, man. Oh, they so deeply need someone. But on the other side, I was also like, this is a, well, here's my line of thoughts. I thought about Kristen Press. I thought, oh, this is a really good get for Angel City. And then I also thought, dang, I really wanted to see her play with the squad that Orlando was building. Because I thought their recruitment has been so smart. And so I was like, oh, I really wanted to see her in that system. I thought it would just be really, really good. But it is what it is. And now she's at Angel City. And I also think that's a brilliant move for Angel City. Like, the amount of her accolades, obviously, came second in voting for Rookie of the Year. I feel like she was probably our Rookie of the Year. Led goal contributions amongst all rookies. Mm-hmm. Also last year, really came in and just kind of made the league her own. And also wasn't score, not to shade tap-ins, because you still need to score them. But it wasn't just she was scoring a bunch of tap-ins. She was scoring headers. She was scoring long range shots, some absolute beauties, finding ways to get in behind it. And yes, at times having those tap-ins, but she was scoring also a wide variety of goals. I think the sky is the limit for her, especially getting, seeing the players that Angel City have picked up, like a player like Araki Rodriguez, seeing her combined with a Masiah Bright, I believe also friend of the pod, Darian Jenkins, said this on Attacking Third, where she was like, if I was a forward, I would love to play with Rocky Rodriguez because of her vision and her passing ability. And I'm just like, Masiah's going to eat, and she's going to eat for Angel City. I think it's a brilliant move. It is a move also that came with intra-league funds as opposed to allocation money. Mm. And I'm like, not another Monopoly money dropping. Please. But no, I think it's an absolute brilliant move on all parts. I guess for outside of Orlando is because they wouldn't want to lose a player of her caliber. But
yeah,
for Angel City and for Messiah Bray, I think it is such a good, it is such a good move. And also, when Kristen Press does come back, the two of them combining,
there we go, now we're
will
talking.
Be lethal. With like Alyssa Thompson on one side,
yeah, yeah,
Kristen Press on the other, like Rocky Rodriguez behind them. That's some, that's going to be some serious footballing.
So yeah, I really like this move, and I could kind of see why. You know, the reports came out that it was requested by Messiah Bright, and I get it. You know, like I like you, I like the squad that Orlando is building. But if you kind of look at it, Orlando is building an attack that doesn't really rely or hinge on Messiah Bright. They have a lot of players that are going to be responsible for putting the ball in the back of the net. I mean, I think Adriana also got like screwed out of an MVP, being on the MVP shortlist. She really should have last season. She was excellent, and I think that's going to continue this season. And so, like, I think going to Angel City, she's just going to be a bigger focal point for that team. And I did do a deep dive on her finishing in my newsletter. And like, listen, when she gets shots on target, she pretty much scores. Her conversion rate for shots on target was like 50%. It's absolutely outrageous. But the thing is, she also shot a lot of you know, off target, you know, a lot of shots blocked. And some of that was because she was being used also to carry the ball forward, almost like a midfielder to take the ball and carry it forward. And so that would cause her to be surrounded by a lot of defenders, and then she would just shoot. I think if there's not only delivery from all angles, you know, you're going to have delivery from out wide with, you know, whichever wingers are starting, but also you think of the fullbacks, Big Nola, you think of June Endo, you know, you think of Jasmine Spencer. She's
No. June Endo is not a fullback.
I mean, she's not, but sometimes...
We're not putting this out.
Sometimes.
Nope. She's safe. She's safe. Forward.
I agree, forward. But I'm just saying. Sometimes, even for Japan, she was a wingback. So I'm just saying she can do these things. But still,
Stop.
I
We're
think
not professing this in the league.
I think that you're right. You're also right. Like, the variety of goals that she scored are great, and some of her best chances come when she's able to receive the ball and then like make a move. Whenever she does that, her ability to score a goal like shoots way up. Like, her post shot expected goal number shoots way up whenever she's in a position like that, because she's very crafty at getting, placing the ball, and also being able to, if she has to dribble around the keeper, she will. If she has to open up space some other way, she will. So like, yeah, I'm really excited about this move for her. And I think she's at one. Well, I know she's absolutely going to build on her goal scoring output from her rookie season, because there's just a lot of learning that you have to do in a rookie season. But this is also a really good destination for her. I could really see her like blowing up, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I can also really see her flourishing out there. Especially also like playing with a player like Sid LaRue. I think she's going to learn a lot and like really grow as a player. So I mean, it really is a good move for Angel City and for Bright, especially the fact that she requested it and Orlando did in fact adhere to it. Yeah. Which
much different than most of the trades we've
I was
about.
Like I'm especially this year, but even like thinking like 2 years ago, that was outside, unless you were like a superstar player, like not saying that Bright isn't a superstar, but I'm thinking about like, for example, like Crystal Dunn. She like,
I mean, it even what last offseason it even happened to Lynn Williams. So even if you are a superstar, sometimes
exactly. Oh, sorry, I meant in terms of like a player requesting a trade and then it actually happening. But as we've seen this season, it still happens for players who don't request trades, and they still get traded. But it is good that like I do just want to make a point of like it is good that Orlando was like, okay, we will try to make this happen, and it did happen, as opposed to I just like think of literally 3 years ago where there was just like, you know, sometimes teams would do good by players, but a lot of times also they wouldn't, and you know, having to wait for contracts to end or something like that, and even then you still have, you know, teams still own your playing rights, like, just I don't know, I'm just thinking about like the old, like the NWSL of like literally 3 years ago, and the fact that players have so much more autonomy now over their careers is great. And also, yeah, I just think she's going to do great for Angel City. And while I'm not moving to Los Angeles, I will take a flight out there to go.
That's frugal of you. You know what? Before we get to our heated and hyped, I do want to mention that we saw some kit leaks. Because shout out to EA Sports, FC24, and Football Ultimate Team. Some digital leaks happened where we saw some little mini icons of some of the new shirts that are possibly coming. I'm guessing if they're uploaded into EAFC and into Foot, then they're probably accurate. Didn't see every teams, but we saw enough to know that it looks like Nike is doing some template bullshit, which really pisses me off. It does seem like Orlando was able to get something fun for their away, so I'm kind of interested to see like what that actually looks like in reality whenever it's announced. Angel City's looked pretty good too, if there's enough contrast for it, so I'm like, I was kind of here for that. But yeah, ultimately, like overall, I was uninspired.
So you're not a fan of Magic School Bus FC?
Please don't.
Who don't know, the Washington Spirits is two tones of yellow in a gradient, however, I love the color yellow. I want to make that clear. I adore the color yellow. Yellow is tied for my favorite color. Like, I love the color yellow and I love wearing the color yellow. However, by some of these, I was unimpressed. I actually like Gotham's away kit, the leaked away kit of the kind of, I mean, I don't like that it's just like a line that changes the color, or it's like a gradient line that changes the color, but I do think the white to like, actually their color is officially called sky blue. In a gradient is kind of cool. I was really hoping a team, and maybe something will change, but I was really hoping a team would bring a vertical striped kit. I was hoping that team would be Gotham. So I could, again, it's just all my benefit.
Well, I mean, we haven't seen them all, so maybe.
We have not. So technically anything's possible, but also seeing how similar some of those kits are to one another.
That is the problem.
That makes me a bit nervous. I will say Orlando's does look cool. That it's like a, what, like an orange and light blue flowery pattern almost?
Yeah, it's either flowers or some sort of like paint
geometric
kind of pattern or something. Yeah, it looks kind of cool though.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say Orlando has always, like, I feel like recently it's had really, really cool kits in the past, I'd say two or three seasons.
Except for when they decided to put silver numbers on the back of a white kit. That was unfortunate, but, you know, they fixed it.
I can't lie. When I saw that kit up in person, and I was like, I think that person is who I think they are, because I've seen them play enough where I can, like, you know, like, when you watch a player up close or, like, player on TV, you can kind of, like, figure out how they run, kind of see how their body shape is. But, man, trying to see that silver on that white was real difficult. I was like, I think that's who it is. And then I'd like put on my glasses. Well, y'all can't see, but I'll show Andre. But I was like putting on my glasses and like deeply squinting in my, like with my glasses on, being like, I think that's who it is. Yes, deeply unfortunate. But the actual kit with the black numbers, it's kind of cool. But yeah, I just want like the NWSL to do something better. Like I think the NWSL should be the first American Soccer League to let teams contract with individual kit suppliers.
Yeah.
So that way they can create their own kits.
It needs to happen.
I can't lie.
Is annoying.
Outside of maybe like making more money for the league by the league having a partnership with these brands, like thinking about like MLS, like I just don't see a reason why these teams would not have their own relationship with kits, like, or like kits. Kit manufacturers. Like, it doesn't make sense to me why it, like, I understand Nike Portland, sure, that makes sense, but it's like, I don't get why Adidas isn't in the mix. I don't get why Puma isn't in the mix. I don't get why New Balance isn't in the mix. Like, I just feel like that should be a thing, and the NWSL should make that happen fundamentally.
Yeah, for me, it's just like, I just, it's not good. Like, I understand the partnership, and this is the thing that pisses me off, because the reason is it's all money. That's it. You know, Nike is saying, here's some money. Cool. We're going to be your exclusive supplier. And okay, fine. You got that money. But if people are always talking shit about your kits, if Nike's going to give you nothing but a bunch of template bullshit, and they're not going to be able to execute interesting designs, they're going to give you like Bay FC. What they just came out with, they hyped their inaugural kit. That thing is so basic. I've seen like on my, like when I used to play like rec league soccer, like I have better kits than that. Like, it's just so frustrating. And it's like, that's not what you want from an exclusive partner. They need to take you, your league and your club seriously, and Nike clearly doesn't and hasn't for a little while now. Like they started out, there are a couple really classic, really good old school NWSL kits, but since like, especially like they're going in the wrong direction, right? As the NWSL grows and becomes more of a league that's like, you know, more, there's more money coming into the league, there's more eyes on the league, there's more players coming into the league that are international, and, you know, the league is growing in its you know, status, which is great, but like Nike's not matching that. Instead, they're going the opposite direction. And they've kind of been doing this on like a global stage where they had to be bullied into putting out like Mary Earps' goalkeeper kit when everybody was like, hey, she's kind of a big deal here, would sure be great to give y'all a bunch of our money so we could have those kits. And that's kind of been Nike's, like, you have to bully them just to get bare minimum. And for me, it's just like, it's a negative. It's not, it doesn't look good for Nike, and it's not a good look for the league. So like, get out of that and let teams do it, because there's so much cultural identity that can be put in a kit, especially the identities, the brands that like the teams have built around themselves in terms of the color scheme, the crest, the cities. There's so many things that you could do that would be so dope, and Nike can only execute on maybe like two or three of them a season, maybe.
You want to know something crazy? Actually, have you seen San Diego's training kits?
Yeah, it's a template, but it's a nice color.
I mean, I think they're, no, have you seen like the light blue one that's like,
yeah,
they have like really cool shoulder designs.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you can do this for a training kit, why can't you do this for the other kits? And I mean, I will say, while I was not had the original idea of San Diego and Lisa Frank, I will say I was a proud originator of the San Diego Lisa Frank Dolphins as a team name. That came straight from a noggin when I created terrible team names for the
and also the Wave teams. Like, you've been all over it, turn of San Diego,
so. You know, and I didn't do that for Bay. And well, I mean, we always knew Utah was going to be Utah Royals again, but I didn't come up with bad team names for Bay. Maybe I should have. But I will say their training kits are really close to that Lisa Frank Dolphins. And I was like, I want that for y'all. I want y'all to embrace the Lisa Frank of like, you're in San Diego. You got to do it. But yeah, I was like, why don't they just make their training kits like their kits? Like, yeah, I understand it's a little like technically it's boring, but it's also to me like so left field of everything we've seen from the NWSL, I feel like, in the past, what, 5 or 6 seasons? Like, that's a neon color. When's the last time we've seen, like, a proper neon color kit? Like, truly. So I'm like, if you can do it for the training kits, what happened with the actual kits? Because I know for Portland's, that leaked kit they have was, like, the Spirit last year. It was just a black shirt.
Yeah.
It was just a black shirt.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, wait, sorry. I didn't mean the Spirit. I meant Magic School Bus FC.
Ready for Heated and Hyped.
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Heated and Hyped. Courtney, what's got you heated?
You go first. Mostly because right, I fine. Forgot.
Oh, all right. All right. Mine
I was really
is...
excited for Hyped.
Well, yes, but we're not there yet. We got to get heated so we end on a high note. This is the flow. This is what we do. Mark Skinner running his damn mouth again. I don't know what's wrong with that dude.
That is hilarious.
I just said on Twitter, all this man does is play a high line and complain. That's it. That's it. That's all he does with his life. And it's really annoying. I don't understand what's wrong with him. So his recent complaint is about spending money. He's looking at Chelsea. Oh, Chelsea spent all the money. They lose a forward. They just spend a bunch of money because Chelsea did spend to get Mara Ramirez, which was great. And Sam Kerr tore her ACL. So they needed to kind of make a move. But like the list of the 2023, the highest transfers came out. And you know who wasn't on this list? Chelsea. You know who was? Manchester United. So for me, it's like, dude, one, you keep losing players and you got to ask yourself what's going on with that, because Russo bounced. So you got to figure out what's going on with the players that you're losing, but also your recruitment, your scouting. What are you getting? Because clearly they're spending money. Did you forget you got Melvin Mallard on your team? Miyazawa, who came over, we had a dope World Cup. You got her on the team. Jace, you got her from Barcelona. Like, what are you talking about? You are getting players. Jade as well. Like, you're getting players to come Why are you complaining about players that you like, you've recruited and have on the team, and you think it's not enough? If it's not enough, maybe you're not doing enough with the players that you got. So why in the world would you get more? Like, what do you like? He's never satisfied. Never satisfied. He's always complaining. And when his team doesn't win, it's, oh, we deserve to win. No, no, that's not how this sport works. If you win, then you win. If you didn't win, then you lost. Like, yes, there are sometimes a referee decisions are a problem. Like, we've complained about Real Madrid, that Real Madrid-Chelsea game multiple times. But that ain't happening to Manchester United every week or every loss that they have or every draw that they have. But here he comes, always complaining, thinks he deserves to be in the Champions League because they couldn't beat PSG in the qualifying round. Yeah, PSG's tough. Yeah, they're going to the qualifier. But, like, you have a lot of talent on your squad. Coach it better. Like, Chelsea's beaten you the past, I don't know how many times, but just kicking the ball over your high line. When are you going to stop that? Like, this is all stuff that's within his realm of being able to change. You use the players you have better. Stop being dumb and playing a high-ass line for no reason. Like, work on the things that you can control to maximize your squad, because you have a squad. He's so annoying. Dude is so obnoxious.
Didn't you leave the NWSL because you couldn't make art here, so you
couldn't
went
do his art. We were stifling his creativity and his art.
You went to Manchester United to make art.
He made art, and now he needs more money, and he needs more art supplies to make his art.
Like, I get it if Manchester United wasn't also, like getting players, but they've been getting players in. Like, right. My guy, like, Melvin Millard literally was scoring a hilarious amount of goals last season for Lyon. Like,
right.
Like, make it make sense. Like, you either got it, you don't got it. And honestly, if you want them to start paying attention to their football club, it might not be great for you at times. Anyway. It's not like a heated per se, but it's a bit of a frustration. And I'm, like, frustrated in two ways, right? Like, I'm frustrated. Like, it sucks that Joe Roar tore her ACL. Any ACL tear sucks, like, fundamentally. But the thing I'm, like, truly frustrated at is every time a player tears their ACL, everyone gets up in arms, rightfully so. But they're like, where's the research? Like, where's the research? Like, why aren't we doing research? And it's like, they are doing research.
Yes.
How about we take those research findings and actually implement them? Because everyone's like, where's the research? What is this? And it's like, every time someone tears their ACL, inevitably someone will talk to players. Like, I've seen a lot of quotes from Beth Mead recently, like, about tearing her ACL in the rehab. Like, her and Vivian Miedema and Arsenal have that Netflix series. I don't know if it's on Netflix. It's streaming. Of them, like, their journey back to getting full fit, making their post ACL debuts. And the craziest part about it, everyone's like, we don't, there's not one fundamental reason of why women's players tear their ACL more than men's players. But, like, two things aren't lost on me, right? And it's not just load management and having big enough squads. Because also part of it is, like, and Beth Mead, and I'm paraphrasing this, but Beth Mead essentially said, I went from playing 2,000 minutes a season for club and country to playing, like, over 4,000 minutes a season for club and country in virtually 2 years. Which is insane. Like, of course it's going to naturally lead to a lot of injuries when also you don't have, like, not only the same squad sizes, but you don't have the same, amount of physios and all. Like, there's a whole, like, if you just want to look at the amount of all of a sudden these accelerated minutes that these players have been playing, the amount of travel that they've been playing, like, the overall lack of resources that women's teams get compared to men's teams. Like, you could even wrap up the whole ACL conversation in that and, like, not even look at, like, biology, physiology, whatever. But I'm, like, frustrated where everyone, like, so many people are like, where's the research? And it's like, there's literally research. There's currently research being done, and there are currently, like, studies and findings coming out that these clubs could implement to prevent ACL tears. And I'm just, like, frustrated where every time it's like, everyone gets all up in arms about the research, but it's like, hey, from the few studies we do have, why don't we implement some of those findings?
Yeah, apply some of this learning. Like, in American football, at least, there used to be a big problem with dudes tearing their ACL and they would be done. Mm-hmm. It was costing a whole lot of money. People were losing, years of their careers. They were coming back and they weren't as good. And it was a big problem. It was taking a lot from talent. And they said, we're not doing that shit no more. We're going to find out scientifically what changes, what's better. So for me, it's not even a women are more prone to this. It's like, no, it was the same. It's just a matter of what's the solution. And in one area, the solution was found and applied because really money, popularity, mm-hmm. and everything that the NFL had. But now in women's teams, especially because it's, you know, we're talking a global sport, we're talking so many that like now all a lot of clubs, it's up to them and federations to institute these things, especially given, like you said, the amount of minutes that players are being asked to play, and the training has to be consistent. The injury prevention has to be consistent.
Right. And it's also like, I mean, there are so many things, like, to me, there are so many things that boil essentially down to money, like money funding resources that could be applied to the women's game that maybe might not prevent ACL injuries, but could also make them a lot, like, could make them a lot less common. Like, especially when I think of like Premier League teams and these academies of having mobility work, having like beginning strength work, not obviously not super early, because if you start it too early, can actually stunt a person's growth. I've seen that not in my life, but like in people and other family members' life and people and friends' life, that people I know. But it's like even just having like physios younger, where a player is not playing through pain and like playing through consistent pain, having like better pitches. Like, how many times are women's players often playing on turf? They hosted a whole World Cup, Women's World Cup on turf. Like, you can't tell me that, like, there's not also just a bunch of maybe minute basic things that when you level the playing field, yeah, players might still tear their ACLs at the same rate, but at least from the actual research that's out there and those findings, you can go in and implement them. I feel like so many players tear their ACLs in college. Like, it's so, like, it is literally so common, and it's like,
yeah, Corey Bethune had three.
Because I follow Dawn Scott on Twitter, and she's constantly tweeting, being like, talking about research or trying to get studies funded and stuff like that. And it's like, I think the ball is starting to roll, but like just shouting about research as opposed to being like, hey, we need to start applying some of these findings that these researchers are finding. Like, talking about like how, I didn't even think about it, but how boots are modeled after a men's foot. Mm-hmm. These players aren't playing in boots that are modeled or like modeled after their feet. And it's like, to me, it's like even basic stuff like that is a step in the right direction. And also is likely a finding from all the research that people have started doing of like ways to make ACL injuries less common in the women's game.
Yeah, it's a multifaceted problem, and it's going to require multifaceted solutions. So, you know, applying research that is already out there is part of that as well. Okay, hyped. Let's end on a good note. Cordy, what's your hyped?
My hyped is our friend Theo, who sent me a care package. I was not expecting it. So for those who don't know, maybe you're a new listener, I got my meniscus fixed. Well, I got my meniscus trimmed in December of 2023. And thus I was down and out for a little bit because I still can't really walk, but I really couldn't walk. And Theo sent me a care package and it was very, very nice. And my mom, to be fair, hid it from me for like 2 weeks. She didn't give me any mail. It's no mail for me. So I just received the care package and it was very nice. So thank you, Theo. I deeply appreciate it.
Love that. I do appreciate the little women's soccer community we got. It's usually looks out for one another. So I really appreciate that. My hype is a little bit personal. I launched my newsletter a couple weeks ago and I've really been just overwhelmed and really appreciative of the response. So thank y'all if you signed up. I did call it Beyond the Vaudevillian Cane. That is a riff on a Twitter joke I make all the time where I try to say something spicy, but then I cut it off and act like a vaudevillian cane is coming to take me off stage. But yeah, it's been cool. And I'm really excited to like get back to regular writing. This is partly an accountability project, but also partly I've gotten a relationship with folks at StatsBomb and they've kind of helped me out. So it still costs money. So I do have a subscription tier, but there's also a free tier as well. But yeah, it's been fun. And so I've been able to do deep dives with some data. I've been able to have some fun with some of the newsletter stuff. I've been able to break down things and just write a lot more because honestly, that's what I really do. I just started doing podcasts because COVID happened. I was bored and I wanted to talk about women's soccer with people. And so I started doing a bunch of podcasts.
I mean, king of podcasts here.
Yeah, but writing is my number one when I like have a piece that I'm proud of. And I've already written a few things I'm proud of. So yeah, that's it. Just wanted to express appreciation. If you would be listening and signed up, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And we're going to keep having fun over there. So thank you.
And subscribe to Andre's newsletter. Subscribe to our newsletter. It is going to make a comeback, especially when the NWSL season starts, because
there are things love happening.
I said, Andre just said he loves writing. Another outlet to write at.
I
do enjoy writing, even though I do it few and far between. A lot of my stuff is just in general production, but having a creative outlet is fun and good, and also is better than just putting together silly little tweets.
True. All right. I think we're done.
I do think we're done.
You know what you're supposed to do when we're done.
I know, but sometimes I don't want to do it.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, I'll say bye, but like sometimes it like comes out of me, and then sometimes I'm like, I'm just not in the mood to say bye right now. But... bye! Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.